We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
This episode of Enough About Me, the season 3 premiere of Enough About Me, is brought to you by HelloFresh. We thank them for supporting Enough About Me. You receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Minahan, M-I-N-I-H-A-N-E 30. So if you're a loyal fan of the podcast, you want more of them, you want to help out HelloFresh, do that. Enough About Me is also brought to you by our great friends, as always, at Milton's. At Milton's, you'll be as comfortable in our stores, you'll be in our clothes. South Shore Plaza, Braintree, and the one I go to, Chestnut Hill Square, Chestnut Hill. All right, we're back. It is season 3 of Enough About Me. The award-winning podcast has broken all barriers, shattered all boundaries, changed the way everyone thinks about everything. I am Kirk Minahan, your host of Enough About Me. James Patterson is my guest. He is the most prolific and best-selling author in America. And has a new book out, I just hit it with my left hand, All-American Murder, The Rise and Fall of Aaron Hernandez is the book. And it's pretty good. I'll say this. If you're like me, and for a living you follow this Hernandez story day in, day out, are there things that are going to blow your mind away? No. Is it a good, comprehensive look at it in total? Yes. Are you reminded of things that blow your mind away when you read it? Yes. I would definitely pick it up. Definitely pick it up. And it is cool talking to an author who is, like I said, you know, maybe the most famous writer in America after Grisham. And I got a kick out of it, too. My dad was a really big James Patterson fan. I know my dad would have really enjoyed the fact that I got to meet him and talk to him. Very nice guy off the air. Good guy to talk to. Nice conversation. Not a long one. Not going to lie to you. Not a long one. We'll have some better ones. Not better ones necessarily. I shouldn't say that. But longer ones and more in-depth ones here as season 3 goes on. When I say season 3, I'm thinking February to summerish, maybe take a month off and then back at it again for what would be season 4, say August to December, take the Christmas month off or so, get back at it in January. That's sort of the state of the podcast right now. I'm going to tape on with Hillman, Greg Hill, which will run in a couple of weeks. And I've said this before, I do want to sneak in a little podcast here or there as well during the week when I can. I enjoy doing them. I wish I did them more. It's been a tough few months podcast-wise. We lost our producer, been busy doing stuff with the show, running back and forth some in-show drama as always. But now we're going to get back at it, which I'm looking forward to a lot. I really do enjoy the podcast. I hope you guys like them as well. Tweet at me if you have any podcast guest ideas. I'm always open to that, at Kirkmin, K-I-R-K-M-I-N. We may be able to do one or two at the Super Bowl every year. We kind of say we're going to do that. But the Super Bowl's a tough spot to do it. I could maybe do a 15, 20-minute spot with somebody. I'm going to try there as well. And that's it, I think. So it's Enough About Me with, again, Guinness Book of World Records says the most successful author in American history, James Patterson, who I looked up, made $96 million last year. Made $96 million last year. It's worth $700 million, according to Forbes. And is talking to me on the phone at 10 o'clock pitching this book. This guy's a worker, man. He is always writing. And I will say, because we talk about toward the end of this podcast, he wrote a book about Jeffrey Epstein called Filthy Rich, which is an unbelievable book. It will blow your fucking socks off. Look it up on Amazon.com if it's your local bookstore. Grab it there as well. And then grab this one, All American Murder, The Rise and Fall of Aaron Hernandez. James Patterson is the season 3 premiere guest on Enough About Me. So I guess my first question is, you know, there's sensational stories or whatever in America every day. This has become an industry, as you know, whether it's reality television, documentaries, books, whatever it is now. So what specifically, I guess, what is it about Hernandez that jumped out to you that journalistically or from a writing perspective thought, oh, this is interesting, this is different?
A lot of pieces. I mean, well, one piece is just the emotional thing for me. My family moved up outside of Boston when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. So I followed the Patriots. I followed the Celtics, and I followed the Sox. So that's a piece of the puzzle. The second piece, for me, this is the most dramatic and complicated high-profile murder story I've come across in maybe 25 years, including O.J. I mean, O.J., if it had happened in Buffalo where he played his pro ball, I don't think it would have been as big a story, but happening in L.A. with Hollywood, which precipitated the Dream Team, and it became bigger and bigger and bigger. But I think this thing is more complicated. We have a lot of information about him growing up in Connecticut.
Yep.
We follow him down to the University of Florida, where stuff mm-hmm. started to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as many as three murders and one attempted murder, at least. And, you know, this is not the way we think of our high-profile entertainers.
What's crazy about it, so obviously, I'm in the EI, I do the morning show here. We covered the case for, you know, really from the start. I remember we were actually doing a remote broadcast at the golf tournament in Hartford, and I'm driving there, and I get a couple of texts from guys on the beat saying, you know, have you heard about this murder in Attleboro? No, I had no idea. They said, you know, we're hearing Aaron Hernandez is involved, and you're thinking, well, wait a minute, like, he's involved, like, he knows the guy who was killed. And then exactly. over the course of a week or two, it gets bigger, bigger, bigger. We do the morning show, like I said.
In the beginning.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in the beginning, I mean, my first thing was, oh, this is no good. I mean, this is good. I didn't think it would be him, but I said this could screw up Gronkowski and Hernandez.
Right. Well, we kept saying, well, okay, obviously there's no way Hernandez actually did it, but boy, it's interesting that he knows the people involved, and all of a sudden we're watching, you know, ESPN one morning, and then bam, all of a sudden there's Hernandez being let out with his, you know, with the handcuffs,
right.
And you're thinking this is...
When the detectives, when they found keys in Odin Lloyd's pockets for a rental car, and they saw the name Aaron Hernandez, they didn't think it was the football player.
Right. Right.
So it was another Aaron Hernandez.
So when you do a book like this, so this book is credited with a couple of other guys, are you essentially, the best comparison, like, are you the executive producer of the book? Are you sitting there, are you actually writing the book? Are you overseeing it?
I wrote a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Part of it is, you know, I need researchers, and I wanted to do this one quickly because I knew, you know, a lot of people would be considering doing this book.
Yeah.
So it was, okay, how do we, and you know, I do have the money enough to go out and get researchers, so that was great. And the book was being written as it was being researched. And while the book was being written, one, there was a big court case in which he was, he was not guilty, according to the jury, and then the suicide.
He dies two days later, or whatever. Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, my agent lawyer called up one morning, he goes, you won't believe what just happened. I said, what? Said Aaron Hernandez killed himself. And I'm like, what? You know, that seemed to, especially given the fact that he had just won a court case.
That's the strangest part. You know, we had one of his lawyers on that Monday after he was found not guilty, and we're thinking, well, you know, and they're talking about it wasn't bias, it was another attorney. They're talking about potentially then trying to get the other case overthrown, and you're
right.
Thinking, well, now for the first time in his life, whether it's false or not, he does the last couple of years, he has a little bit of a glimpse of hope, and then 2 days later he hangs himself
way in the prison.
Right.
He was talking that way in the prison.
Right, as you're right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So our show...
That's its own trip, too. I don't know if you've gone to many prisons, but
yeah.
it's stunning. It's just amazing. I was in the cell where he killed himself, and the place where he got to exercise, which was this, you know, this cage.
The cage, yeah.
Outdoor cage, yeah.
Right. Do you buy into any of these conspiracy theories at all?
No.
About his... He committed suicide, no doubt in your mind.
I think so, yeah.
Do you buy into...
I mean, for starters, that way of killing yourself, if you go, people go, how could he, you know, hang himself from this 5-foot window, da-da-da-da. Well, he sort of slung himself down, and then his body weight basically, you know, killed him. And that particular way for inmates to kill themselves, it was well known and had already happened inside that jail. So people knew about it in the jail.
So our morning show, you know, me and Jerry Callahan, we're the morning show that Michelle McPhee came on the air and said that Hernandez had a homosexual relationship with this Kyle Kennedy. That was our show. So that sort of turned into a whole thing, blows up, obviously, the Dr. Phil stuff, all these things. I finished your book. I read your book. Tell the people, I guess, listening to this podcast, what is your theory? What is your take on that? Do you believe that?
We never got anything that suggested homosexuality. We just didn't come up with from nobody. Nobody that knew him. You know, we talked to some of the people involved with him. You know, we talked to Ortiz. We talked to Wallace. We didn't get anything. Trying to remember whether I didn't talk to Bradley. I think we did, though. So nothing came up that way. And the other thing is, look, he's in his cell 22 and a half hours a day, okay? When he gets out of his cell, they're right on top of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how the hell, you know, in prison he could have, you know, whether something was going on with Bradley, I don't know, you know, who knows. But we came up with nothing. And I'm not going to put anything in the book where we're not 100% sure of it.
It seems to me, it seemed to us at the time, we covered a lot. Obviously, we covered the first trial. By the time we got to the second trial, there was some listener fatigue. But it struck me, and it strikes me reading this book, that this is not one of the great criminal minds in history, though.
Well, no. I think there's a lot of evidence that there was that the brain damage was affecting him. But you think about that last, you know, the last murder.
The Owen Lloyd murder.
The Owen Lloyd murder. You know, I mean, for starters, it's a friend of his, so that's going to come out. Secondly, he commits the murder less than a mile from his house.
Right.
What? Seriously?
The car,
he leaves
the rental car
close by the body. Four shells sitting right by the body. He leaves the car keys of the rental car with his,
name on it. Right.
In the pocket.
Right.
He leaves a cell phone with calls to him in another pocket. He shoots at a sign. While he's leaving the place, he leaves the shell in the car, you know, and this is insane. I think at that point, you know, maybe a combination of the brain damage and drugs. I think he was kind of, you know, crazed. And personally, I think when he killed himself, maybe the same thing. I think he had it in his head. I don't know this for sure, but a little bit of evidence that he honestly believed that if you had committed yourself and believed in Jesus, you would be saved, and he would be saved. And he also thought that somehow, you know, if he killed himself now, that his fiancée and the baby would
daughter
be taken care of. Because, you know, he said to her, you know, you're going to be rich.
Do you think, I've always felt that Hernandez is one of these guys who kind of obviously wanted to seem like he was a gang guy, a thug guy. And yeah. I thought he was going to be more comfortable in prison and spend 40 years there and become the king of the prison. I was more surprised, James. I was more surprised when he killed himself than when I found out he killed somebody, if that makes any sense.
You were more what? Surprised?
I was more surprised when I found out he committed suicide than when he committed the actual murder. I was stunned.
Here's the thing about the prison, though. He was not the king of the prison in any way, shape, or form.
Right. No, I didn't know that. Right. Yeah.
They didn't care that much about him one way or the other. And I talked to one of the wardens. I said, was he be considered a tough guy here? And he says, no way. No way. They said he was, you know, by prison standards, he was soft. He said, I got a bunch of guards here that are a lot tougher than Aaron Hernandez was. And we think of, you know, big football player, blah, 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 blah. You know, but he wasn't a fighter. He wasn't, you know, he was okay pulling a trigger, apparently, but not at fighting.
You reached out to everybody involved with the Patriots, I'm guessing?
Yeah, we reached out. Yeah, that was the one disappointment. Nothing from the NFL. And I went at Goodell a couple of times. I mean, personally called him up, and not even a response, which, I mean, I kind of understand, given the lawsuits, that they wouldn't be able to give us much. And I wasn't out to crucify anybody, but nothing from them. And I made it pretty clear to them, nothing from the Patriots. I think same thing with all the lawsuits. I talked to Tim Tebow, and he was very polite and everything, but he just declined. And I said, look, Tim, I'm not looking for any more dirt on this guy. I got all I can need. I want to know more about the human being. Tell me about him down at Florida. And Tim just said, he said, I might want to talk at some point, but not right now.
You talked to Urban Meyer?
Yeah, Urban, he did. He was on the team. We did 48 hours.
Yeah.
And he was great. And I think he did a nice job. I mean, look, kid comes into school. I mean, you can't watch over him 24-24. But he did Bible study with the guy several times a week. He roomed with
Hernandez. Yeah,
with Hernandez, on the road. And that was Urban Meyer's doing. Urban had him over to the family, and I think that Hernandez started to trust Urban and look at him as kind of a father figure. Clearly, the death of Hernandez's
his dad,
father,
Dennis Hernandez, yeah,
had this effect on him, and that may even be whatever psychopathic tendencies he had that may have come out of that a little bit. Where you go, you know what? Nothing matters. If you can take my father away for no reason at 46, I'm not going to believe in anything.
Well, he just becomes shockingly brazen in his actions, like, you know, like a guy begging to get caught. I mean, you see, you know, you bump into him in the nightclub, he's ready to beat you up. You bump into him in a nightclub, you spill a drink on you, he he's going to shoot you. I mean, he goes from a guy who is, you know, in at University of Florida, obviously he may have been involved, but then it goes nuclear toward the end of his life. I mean,
and interestingly, in Florida, he was popular. He was, you know, he's always been a hard worker in terms of playing football, but he was popular. Chico, nickname, had a lot of friends down there. And the Patriots, you would know this better than I do, but we couldn't find any sense that he had any friends on the Patriots.
No, he don't. It's
he big, would go right into the to his buddies from Connecticut.
No, I know you talked to Rappaport and Albert and all those guys, and I would hear the same thing, as he was, you know, not necessarily disliked, but sort of on his own,
distant, yeah,
yeah,
aloof, and yeah.
What role do you? What blame do you assign, if any, to the Patriots for this entire thing? Could they have prevented it in any way, shape, or form?
No, I don't think. I think he was on his merry way in terms of the brain damage and drug use and whatever. I guess you'd have to go, okay, how did he keep passing these drug tests? That's a question I would have. I don't think. I mean, look, you hire. I mean, granted, he was the youngest guy in the NFL
in the league, yeah,
at 19, so he was a kid. But, you know, you hire somebody, I don't know. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, you can't watch over your employees that much.
I would say, though,
I don't think they had any suspicion that, you know, that he was nearly as violent as he was.
Although he does meet with Belichick in Indianapolis, which obviously for a veteran player to do that is a strange move at the combine, and basically says, trade me, you know, my life's in danger, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is strange.
Yeah, it's spooky. I mean, I've had threats, even about this a little bit. And at a certain point, initially, it's like
threats about the Hernandez book.
Yeah, yeah.
What threats?
Know, some kook. I don't want to get into it too much.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody has contacted us half a dozen times now.
You keep
owning life rights, supposedly.
Oh,
you know, like that's supposed to stop you writing a book.
Right. You know? All right, back with James Patterson here in just a second. First, let me tell you about our new sponsor, HelloFresh. You choose your delivery day that works for you and pause for weeks when you're out of town. Very easy. HelloFresh offers a wide variety of recipes that change weekly. You get the classic, the veggie, the family. I've enjoyed the meals sent to me. You know, you know me. I'm a picky eater, but I had the ravioli, which was excellent. The burger was tremendous. The kids like it. By the way, you have the easy ravioli stuff. You have some spinach in there as well. You are in business. Everybody liked HelloFresh. You don't spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take around 30 minutes. But for me, like with Kate, she likes to do stuff like that. We get to do it together, talk about her day. Boom, and then you're done. You have a nice dinner. Easy peasy. HelloFresh makes it so easy to cook delicious, balanced dinners for less than $10 a meal. You feel confident the simple recipes outlined on pictured step-by-step instruction cards, which I need. A lot of you dummies out there as well. You know, people love it. You absolutely cannot go wrong. You look forward to your weekly HelloFresh box delivery, knowing dinner just got easier and better and less expensive. Here's what you do. You go to HelloFresh.com, HelloFresh.com. Use the code Minahan30. You get $30 off your first week of deliveries. They have a couple of registered dietitians on staff who review each recipe to ensure it is nutritionally balanced. Whether you're a busy professional person or a large family that runs at a breakneck speed, or someone who wants to start cooking more, HelloFresh makes it easier, tastier, and healthier than ever to enjoy the experience of cooking new recipes and eating together at home. You keep talking about the brain damage for Hernandez, CTE, which is significant at age 27. But my thing is, there are guys in the league right now who have CTE, and they're not killing people.
Exactly.
They're not killing people, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I mean,
his was pretty severe, but right, yes. I mean, we don't really have too much evidence or any evidence really that people with this disease have gone out and killed people. They've killed themselves. But not to our knowledge, other people.
Well, how much
not caused by the brain damage.
How much do you think Jenkins knew?
Weirdly, my niece, who's a neurologist at Boston University Hospital, she was involved with this thing.
Really?
Which I found out after the fact.
After the fact?
That was one of the weird, eerie. The other, for me, very eerie thing was when I saw his library card at one of the prisons.
Oh, yeah. What books do you like?
Well, his favorite authors, number one, James Patterson.
There you go. He liked
John Grisham, number three, Michael Connelly.
He liked the Alex Cross books,
that
right?
That was spooky. That was spooky. Comic books. Come on. Give me
No, I said Alex Cross books, I said.
Oh, yeah.
How much did Jenkins know?
Once again, the family wouldn't talk to us very much. We got a lot of cooperation in Connecticut, but not with the family. I think, you know, they want to write their own books. and I don't blame her. I think she's going to have trouble unless she's really willing to, unless she knows some things that she's willing to admit. If not, I don't know that publishers are going to want her book. Baez has a book coming.
Oh, he does?
I don't know if it's only about Hernandez. Yeah, I talked to him briefly. You know, I think we were both feeling each other out. Well, what if we go together? And he goes, I know a lot of stuff you don't know. And I'm sure he does. But that was as far as that went.
How long, so from conception to having it out to the public, how long is this process doing this book? And it's accelerated, but how fast is it?
7 months or so.
And how was that?
Quick.
How was that as opposed to, say, I'm trying to get...
and whatever. I usually try to figure a year, but I do a lot at the same time. So I'm figuring a year. The kids' books are. I do a lot of kids' books too.
So I mean, you're worth $3 zillion. You've already written five billion books. I mean, at what point do you say, you know what? I'm putting my feet up.
I don't work for a living. I have my feet up. I don't work for a living. I play for a living. This is not work.
But writing is work, though.
Not for me.
Not at all.
This is. I love telling stories. Yeah, and look, it's not like. You write for a newspaper, and they give you got to go out and do this, you got to do that. I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. And for the most part, with the publisher, and I want to hear everything they have to say, but when I say it's biscuits. So I don't have that kind of stress, you know what I mean? And I'm writing about things I want to write. I wanted to write it. I wanted to, at the end of this book, for people to read it and go, you know what, that was a good read. And I think writing in scenes helps it to be a good read as opposed to a lot of nonfiction. And then I wanted them to say, I got a kind of a feeling for this guy now that I didn't have before. And as I said, to me, it's certainly psychopathic tendencies for sure, the effect of CTE, and a lot of drugs.
Well, and
being pampered from when he was, 15.
Right, treated like he was God for since he was a teenager. How much? We're talking drugs, though. I mean, the drug number is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The amount of drugs this guy took, huge.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
and and that last night, he's with the Odin Lloyd murder. Mm-hmm. He's got a drug dealer in the car with him. He
right.
Called the guy up to come on up. I want to I don't know what the hell he told the guys. We almost got right at the end on the 48 hours. Carlos Ortiz had agreed to talk to us. He's in prison. He's going to get out soon. And we all got a camera's whole ball of wax up there, and he said, I can't. And he's shaking, and he said, I can't talk to you guys. I can't talk to you guys. So I don't know what the heck happened there. I suspect maybe his lawyer said, you're not going to get anything from this. We weren't going to give him money, so you're just jeopardizing, getting out of prison.
If you're a New England guy like I am, or somebody else who followed this case day in day out, what are the one or two things in the book that we didn't know about that's going to kind of really jump out at us?
I think the total portrait, I think, is what comes out. I think we got a lot more from the police and prison officials than most people did. Got a lot more in terms of University of Florida, because I'm down here and I got a lot of contacts in Florida. So we got a lot up in Gainesville. I think the stuff in Connecticut is relatively fresh, even though the family didn't cooperate. And it's the whole thing. I mean, look, you do a story, it's 20 minutes, or somebody writes a newspaper article, it's a couple thousand words. It's,
right.
390 pages. So there's a lot in there to complete the portrait. And I think it's very readable because it's scenes. And I thought the cops were really, really good. The captain up there in North Attleboro, the lieutenant from the state troopers. I love talking to them, and they... the captain, he's delivering his kid to school,
and
he gets a call, and he was less than a mile from where a body had been found, so he's the first on the scene, but he's been delivering his kid to school, and he said, I believe he said like over 18 years, only been like 6 homicides in that town, and here all of a sudden is this monster thing.
Right.
He and the lieutenant were saying that it got crazy. I mean, every day they look outside and there's 40, 50 paparazzi reporters outside this little police station. And he said at one point the two of them ran out of the building, jumped into the car, turned on the siren, hauled ass out of the yard, drove about a mile, paparazzi following him, you know, whatever, pulled into a Burger King for lunch, you know.
All right, back with James Patterson here in just a second. I'm happy to take a break here to talk about my great friends at Milton's. We brought Ken Laird there and Chris Curtis a couple of weeks ago. Milton's is the greatest. I they've been so loyal to us, and we are so proud to have them as a sponsor, not just of the show, but of this podcast. It is quite simply the store for men. If you want to go and get outfitted and look great, don't mess around. Don't go online. Don't go searching. You guys don't know what you're doing. I know I don't. You drive to South Shore Plaza in Braintree or where I go, Chestnut Hill Square, Chestnut Hill. You'll get outfitted by Milton's. You'll walk in. The people are great. The prices are great. The look is great. Very simple. If you like simple stuff done well, you just go to Milton's. You'll look, I'm telling you, look fantastic when you walk out of there. Milton's is the best shopping experience I've ever had in my life. I hate shopping. I love going to Milton's. I love the clothes. I love the people there. I love how they do business. Milton's is the store for men. How do you think Hernandez got off on the second trial?
A great lawyer. Great lawyer and who was able to basically, you know, make the case. There's not enough evidence. You can't convict this guy, whatever you might think.
But you think he did it, right?
I think he did it, yes.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, but you're right. Baez tapped dance and fooled those people.
Baez
like
is
crazy,
man.
Yeah, no, he's never lost,
no,
basically,
he's
right?
Unbelievable. He got Casey Anthony.
Right, right.
How do you do that?
That's a good question.
You know, your kid is found, close to the house.
Honestly, who else would have done it?
I don't know. But
nobody.
I mean, it's amazing that he got her off, and to me, amazing that he won that case. But I guess, one interesting thing is they felt that, you know, a lot of people felt there was more evidence in the Furtado and De Abreu case than there was
Lloyd.
Odin Lloyd. They never found the gun in the Odin Lloyd thing.
Right. The text back and forth, you know. Again, I go over how crazy the text back and forth with Bradley are insane. We read them in the book, and you're thinking this guy Hernandez, who then, you know, puts his phone down and goes to work with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick every single day, and it's insane. It's just double life is crazy.
The language of those things.
Oh.
I mean, and that's just them, just in general.
It's just a shorthand, and right, it's nuts.
But and the style of it. I mean, that's the one thing where when people start with the homosexual possibilities, that's the one place where you go, boy, I don't know, this stuff does feel a little romantic.
And he makes it very clear. He keeps wanting to say that he's no homosexual. Like every three sentences.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Right. It was very weird. And then initially the guy goes, you know, I didn't tell the cops you did it, but I'm coming after you.
Right.
And then I guess he had second thoughts, and he goes, well, actually, I'm not going to come after you, but I want money.
Did he ever get money?
Not to my knowledge. No.
Before I let you go, Matt, I just want to ask
I think he had a lawyer involved, too.
He did. He's looking for, what, $1.3 million, you wrote? I mean, he was ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a couple of the questions before I let you go. I know how busy you are. The one of the book you wrote recently that I just picked up and blew through, I talked about it on the air.
Filthy Rich.
Fantastic. Filthy Rich is so great.
I mean,
so great, but can I ask you one quick question?
People in Filthy Rich, you got a billionaire who allegedly had sex with 40 underage girls. He gets like 11 months.
Talk about brazen.
In prison. Versus like Harvey Weinstein and all this other stuff. I mean,
right.
This guy is, if he's guilty of half of this stuff, he's the head of the class. He's in a whole nother class.
No question. My question is, why has this not been a bigger story? Why has it not made a bigger impact? This is, given the people he's connected with, this story is so crazy.
Dream team. He got the dream team. They quashed this thing. They quashed it. It was still being investigated. They had, you know, tapes of all these young girls who, you know, the police had tapes of these girls saying what had happened. And they were still investigating. And then the police were told there's been a settlement. He's going away for, you know, it was a little more than 11 months, but I think that's what he wound up.
But he was essentially running, you know, an underage prostitution ring out of his house.
Yeah, except he was the only person.
Right, he's got these.
He wasn't farming them out.
True, no, that's true. But his 14, 15-year-old girls swinging by, and if they're not good-looking enough, he kicks them out. The Hernandez book is excellent, too, but the Filthy Rich book, which I think sort of, given that you're writing it, given the story's great, I don't think got enough publicity. I mean, this is a great, fascinating story.
It got squashed early, and then, you know, it's some of the press, I mean, oh, well, we've covered that. You know, they kind of covered that.
Not really, though.
They didn't.
No.
Oh, I know. Well, we have Peter Landisman, who did, weirdly, the Concussion movie.
Will Smith. Yeah,
he's developing Filthy Rich.
Oh, really?
So that could be interesting. Yeah, because he's been involved in cases with underage girls before in terms of his writing for the New York Times and stuff. So he's really into it emotionally. So we're going to be out there in Hollywood in a couple of weeks talking to people about that one.
So when the movie comes out like Kiss the Girls or whatever, and you sell the rights, are you handing the baby over? Or are you hands on? Can you say I want Morgan Freeman? Or how does that work?
No, they don't care.
They don't care.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember going to the press junket for one of the Alice Cross movies, you know, and they said, well, we better let Jim see the movie because the press is going to ask him what he thinks of it, you know. So I'm watching this movie, you know, from a book that I wrote, and I watched the first scene, and I go, all right, well, that wasn't in the book. and I watched the second scene, and Morgan Freeman, Alice Cross, is building a ship in a bottle. And I go, well, that wasn't in the book either. And then this woman comes in, you know. And I'm going, who the hell is this woman? You know, it's not his, I don't know who she is, not his Nana Ma. I don't know who she, you know, and I wrote the book, you know.
Right.
But I see Morgan Freeman a little later in this press junk. I go, Morgan, who is the second woman in the movie? He goes, oh, that's Alice Cross's sister. I said, oh, I didn't know Alice had a sister. That's Hollywood. I got to run.
All right, well, I appreciate the book is excellent. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thanks, James. Thanks for listening to Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. If you want more great podcasts, it's pretty easy. You can go to the WEEI mobile app. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to iTunes. You can look up Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. You can find the ones with Sean McDonough, Bob Ryan, Dan Shaughnessy, David Portnoy. There'll be more. And what you can do when you like them, you write a review. That'll help us out a lot. You give us a rating. We can help you. You can help us. Get that done. Do it right now.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.